Greetings and welcome to the 2Q 2019 panel discussions on mid-cap equities. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question and answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. Should you require operator assistance at any time, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded today, Tuesday, July 9th, 2019. I would now like to turn the conference over to Barry Mandinac. Please go ahead, sir.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. This is Barry. I'm an Executive Vice President and Head of Distribution here at Virtus Investment Partners, and I wanted to welcome you all to today's panel discussion. Today's call is going to be moderated by our Chief Market Strategist, Joe Terranova, and will feature three portfolio managers from two of our affiliates. John Christensen is a portfolio manager and senior research analyst at Kayne Anderson Rudnick. Doug Foreman serves as Chief Investment Officer and Portfolio Manager at Kayne Anderson Rudnick, and Don Wardell is Managing Director and Portfolio Manager at Ceradex Value Advisors. We have found on the mid-cap side of the market, it's often overlooked and falling in between the widely followed large caps and small caps that are very well known for their high growth potential. But I think what you'll hear from our three portfolio managers, along with Joe, is some great opportunities that they're seeing in the mid-cap space, not just today, but over time. So what I'd like to do is turn it right over to Joe and to the group for them to have a bit of a discussion, and then we'll open it up for some questions. I want to welcome you all again. Thank you all for joining us today. And now let me turn it over to my friend Joe Terranova for our discussion.
Thank you, Barry. Good afternoon to everyone joining the call today. It's been a long and tumultuous 6 to 8 weeks as we have all, as stewards of capital, had to navigate significant macro headwinds. And before we begin the call with the three gentlemen, as Barry discussed, I'd like to just kind of outline for you real quickly the macro environment. But in doing so, please understand, I want to emphasize the importance of a multi-asset approach and the benefit that that multi-asset approach provides a portfolio in terms of diversification and rebalancing opportunity. So if we were to think back over the last 12 to 15 months about rebalancing opportunities, there were generally moments in the market where the particular asset class had fallen far away from consensus positive expectations. So for all of you on the call, I'm sure your phones were ringing off the hook in the fall of 2018 as your clients clamored for a rebalancing opportunity in municipal bonds. And I'm sure 15 months ago, we had the same type of fever as it related for investors wanting to have ownership of real estate, of utilities, of even MLPs. So I want to emphasize a rebalancing mindset as we have this conversation, as we discuss mid-caps and the importance that they can provide in your portfolio. But let's first set the table as it relates to the macro. Let's begin with the obvious. Let's begin with the trade war, trade dispute, trade squabble, however we want to define it. Let me share with you the expectation based on the evidence as it exists currently. Okay, I think all investors need to be prepared for an environment that's been very similar to the last 371 days now. What's happened over the last 371 days is that the U.S. and the Chinese have embarked upon placing economic tariffs on the goods exported from each of the countries. That's a condition that's been with all investors over the last 370 days. Now think about where global assets are over those 370 days. Rather than getting definitively complicated, let's just define it as such. We can expect through the 2020 election that there will be periods both of encouragement that there'll be a resolution and periods of disappointment that will fall back far from the possibilities of coming to a resolution and a favorable outcome. you can expect volatility in the macro headwinds as it relates to the U.S. and Chinese squabble, dispute, war, however we want to define it. What that should not do is discourage anyone from investing. Why? Because the performance of multi-assets are suggesting the need to be invested. So this will remain in the headlines, even if there's a resolution, there's the enforceability of whatever the outcome might be, and it should not discourage investors. Secondarily, we've had a dramatic pivot as it relates to the Federal Reserve. Now, the Federal Reserve is the lone central bank that has attempted over the last several years to significantly tighten its monetary policy. QE transitions to QT. In January of 2019, the Federal Reserve communicated a dramatic shift in that policy where it suggested there was a pause in the QT mechanism. While that was occurring, the rest of the world, based on the communication from the Federal Reserve, used that as an opportunity to reaccelerate their easy monetary policy. For all of you on the call, I would expect the ECB sometime in September or October to begin purchasing corporate bonds once again. Remember, they paused their purchases of corporate bonds in December. So we've seen a dramatic shift in monetary policy that's walking back towards, once again, global easing and a pause in the tightening here in the United States. As it relates to your particular investments, it's very difficult to identify specifically where the optimal opportunity might be. Again, we want to rely on the diversification mechanism. However, what we want to understand is the impact on rates, on volatility, and on inflation. And each of those three conditions are going to be relevant as we have this conversation about mid-caps and as we tie it together with rebalancing. The last component of this conversation is earnings, and that's what I need everyone here to think about. Earnings expectations as we come into the coming quarter and reflect back on the April 1st to June 30th calendar quarter, and we have S&P 500 companies reporting earnings. Now, EPS, relative year-on-year, is the expectations right now are somewhat negative. I would say the expectations are rather low, a near 2%, let's call it a 1.8 EPS contraction expectation. As it relates to revenue, you're going to see a modest lift on the revenue side, but you're going to see profit margins continue to deteriorate. We had the first profit margin decline in the prior quarter since 2016 as the benefit of the tax cut begins to wear off. So you've got three macro conditions, okay? Chinese trade squabble, global monetary policy, and what the earnings are going to present to us. And in each of those three conditions, what I encourage everyone on this call to do is to be invested. Not be concerned, not look in the rearview mirror that 2008 is coming once again, okay? We have inflated a pessimistic outlook both in December of 2018 and once again here in May of 2019. And we're deflating that pessimism somewhat. We see that in the defensive orientation of the market as it relates to equities themselves. But the message is to be invested. The message is to be diversified. The message is to rebalance. And with that in mind, let's begin this conversation talking about the forgotten asset class, talking about a component of the equities market that I would liken to the middle child in the family, okay, who gets the least attention, but is so critically important. So, Doug, if I could begin with you, thank you for joining the call today. Could you just walk us through a little bit? I spoke about volatility, rate sensitivity. Obviously, we know in a interest rate environment where we see rates declining, we see inflation decelerating, the investment community looks at mid-caps and maybe looks at them less favorably than large caps. but talk about the opportunity in terms of rebalancing and not predicting where rates are going to go, where volatility is going to go, or inflation is going to go, but just the sensitivity and the importance of looking at that on a much longer-term time frame.
Sure, Joe. Well, I think, you know, the key, as you mentioned, is, you know, global growth has been slowing all year. Rates look like they're likely to, instead of heading up like everybody assumed they were going to at the end of last year, looks like they're probably going to start heading down. So the key issue, I think, for mid-cap stocks and stocks in general, quite frankly, is, you know, what happens with the earnings picture. You know, because if you're cutting rates and earnings are falling apart, you know, equity markets and even mid-caps aren't going to do terribly well in that environment. If, on the other hand, you're cutting rates and earnings are holding together and or accelerating or improving, then you're going to do just fine, thank you, and the equity markets and the mid-caps in particular should do exceptionally well. I'm in the camp, the latter camp. I think that, you know, growth has slowed. Growth is likely to continue to be sort of punkish. But I do think the Fed is on the case, and they will at least stop making things worse by incremental rate increases. Instead, they'll be providing some incremental support. And I think some of these areas of spending that have been going on, particularly in areas of technology, as businesses need to digitize their operations in a whole variety of industries, I think is going to continue unabated. So I think there's a lot of powerful secular forces that are driving spending in a lot of categories, particularly in the mid-cap area. And so I think there's a lot of companies that will continue to grow their revenues and earnings, even in a slower global growth environment with little to no difficulty. And hopefully we've owned the right ones, which is what we try to do day to day here at Kane.
So we basically can define the environment of the last really 6 months to where inflation's falling, the dollar is advancing, growth is decelerating, and rates are falling. Each of those four conditions, I think you would agree with me, present an adverse view of ownerships of mid-caps. So if you, in the simplistic of capacities, were to suggest that we're going to now be in a flat or rising rate environment, historically, wouldn't it make sense that this is a tremendous rebalancing opportunity where mid-caps will actually outperform small and large cap?
Well, it's possible. You know, being the middle child, it's always difficult to tell exactly how mid-cap's going to perform overall as an asset class. But I will tell you that, you know, John Christensen, who's here with me today, who runs Mid-Cap Core, and I manage the mid-cap growth portfolios day-to-day, you know, we're very confident about the companies we own that they're going to be able to grow over the next 3 to 5 years with little to no difficulty. And so, and that they're not over-earning and the businesses aren't going to fall apart even in a difficult time period or a slower growth environment. And really that's what we end up focusing on day to day. The macro environment isn't so bad that in terms of what we see day to day that we have to worry too much about, you know, any sort of disruption to the types of companies that we own. So that's really what we're trying to focus on.
Great. Don, thank you for joining the call today. If I could bring you in and briefly, if you could just, there seems to be, it's a moving target, how we define the market cap range for mid caps. Could you kind of educate us as to, number one, what we should be thinking on a range, if possible, for market cap, mid-cap, and why is there that moving target?
Sure. Thanks for having me. So, you know, it's interesting. When I first was running mid-cap portfolios, this one in 2001, mid-cap at that time was defined as 1 to 10 billion. You know, small caps were below a billion. Anything over 10 billion was considered large cap. You know, just through market movements and, you know, the invention of some other things called SMID cap and other movements in the markets and the way people wanted to invest, the mid cap universe has expanded. So what we've done, and we've looked at a few of our competitors and they've done the same thing, is we just, the only thing that we rely on the benchmark for is to just define mid cap for us, because every year, the Russell, which is the predominant benchmark used institutionally, the Russell Mid-Cap Index, it's the mid-cap. They define mid-cap as the smallest 850 stocks in the Russell 1000. So every year in late June, a couple weeks ago, it was reset. And so this year, they define mid-cap as something around $2 billion to about $35 billion, which sounds like a huge opening, a huge market cap range, and it is. But that's, you know, that's just the nature of the beast. And so, you know, that's how what we do is try to keep the portfolio about 80% of it within that range so that we stay in our sandbox. And a lot of our competitors do that as well. So it's just a function of markets moving over the last 20 years and, you know, just how mid-caps are defined. Again, it's the smallest 850 stocks in Russell 1000, and then they work their magic to come up with value and growth. But that's really how it's defined.
John, I hear from investors all the time, well, I'm going to get exposure from to the mid-cap space because I have large and small caps. How is that? How can you get the effective exposure to mid-caps by owning large and small?
Hi, Joe. Yeah, thanks. I think that's a great question, and the honest and quick answer is you can't. And the reason you can't is, you know, talking a little bit what Dom was talking about, if you, as you said, a lot of people traditionally try to play mid-caps by, okay, I'll own some small-cap names, and I'll own some large-cap names. I kind of got it covered, right? Well, that's not really the case. Again, I think if you look at most typical small-cap managers, they are holding names typically under $10 billion. So let's say you buy a stock at $1 billion, they usually are selling it around $10 billion, right? So, and then let's go to the large-cap range, right? So large-cap investors, the Russell 1000, the average weighted market cap is around $300 billion. So let's just say on the lower end of the range, it's $100 billion. So let's just say from 10 to $100 billion, I guarantee they're you're not having any exposure in that area. And that's a huge area. So our argument is this is the why that when you look at the market overall, I mean, 26% of the overall equity market is in that mid-cap area, but only 13% is actually being invested. So that's why, to your question, we don't think people are getting proper exposure by having small and large, and we think that's why mid-cap is such a great opportunity for us going forward.
Doug, let me ask you just in terms of sector diversification. Obviously, you're looking at the S&P 500, and that's basically 70%, I believe, large caps, but it's so technology-oriented. Do I get the sector diversification in the mid-cap space that maybe I'm missing from large caps?
Well, it depends, you know, it depends on the different segments of mid-cap, right? And mid-cap value, you're not going to get a lot of technology, and so you're getting more diversification there, if you will, away from, you know, large S&P 500 tech names in particular. Mid-core is sort of a hybrid between mid-growth and mid-value. Mid-growth has about, the way they define tech, has about 34%. It's got a pretty significant chunk of the index is in technology and technology-related companies. So so it's tech is an important segment of the economy, and I would argue it's the single largest wealth creation industry in this country in the last 50 years and continues to be. So, you know, on the growth side, it's a significant weighting, whether it's large or mid for sure. It's a little lower, actually, if you go down into the small cap, but in mid and large, it's a significant sector still.
All right, so John, talk a little bit, if you would, about the distinction, growth, core, value. I know your focus is core. Would I consider that a combination of growth and value? How do I think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think especially in mid-cap, I think you do have to think about these in different buckets because, as Doug pointed out, I think for the more growth in the mid-cap space, again, going back to technology, for example, 34% of the index is in technology, whereas in mid-cap, core, it's only 15%, right? So we also think about things here at Kane in terms of when we look at core growth and value, we also look at end market opportunity, how fast the industry's growing. And typically, when you have a faster industry growth where there's more revenue opportunity and the companies have less maybe opportunity to pay out their free cash, those are typical growth companies. And slower industry growth companies for us where their free cash is more put back into share buybacks and dividends, those are typically value companies for us. And then core has a little bit of a hybrid in between each of those. But again, when you take the sectors into consideration, I think you have a much more of a unique product in core growth and value. So for us, we do think you can distinguish a lot between those different styles in mid-cap.
Okay. So, John, with that in mind, when I'm thinking about, we're thinking of the terms value, core, growth. Obviously, value is a word that in the last couple of years as a strategy has struggled. How should I be thinking about value, mid-cap value, as it relates to the other tenants, whether it be small or large, and in your management of the portfolio, what is it exactly in terms of a characteristic that you view as optimal in defining your desire, your energy to invest in particular companies that can be identified as mid-cap value?
Okay, this is Don. You
yes.
Wanted me to answer that? You said John.
Yes,
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I said Don.
No, that's right. So, sure. So when we look at, for us, value is relative to the fundamentals of the company. And so when we see companies, when you by truly doing your valuation work correctly, you're valuing companies compared to their peer group. And when we look at the peer group and find companies that are trading at a discount to their peers, and we can do our fundamental work and get really comfortable with the companies, management teams, and do all that, kicking the tires and cracking open the Q's and K's, that's what where we can get excited about companies. And so we look at fundamentals. That's what helps us define value. There are companies out there that are value traps where their fundamentals just never get any better or just continue to decline, where the absolute multiple that they're trading at simply doesn't matter. And that's part of our job as active managers to determine the difference. And so we're looking at just fundamental companies, and the fundamentals for companies just depend upon the sector. It's different fundamentals for every different sector out there. So that's how we look at it. Is we define value as relative to the fundamentals.
Okay, I'm going to take everyone in a direction. This is kind of a jump ball for the three of you. I just want to talk a little bit about this debate between active and passive. If you think about AUM, obviously the predominance of passive is in towards or geared towards large cap, somewhere, let's call it around 46-47%, less obviously and small, somewhere around 25-26%, and also mid cap. So mid cap AUM, okay, passively managed, again, is somewhere around 25-26%. Jump ball here, talk about how active succeeds and is the right approach as it relates to mid-cap investing.
So this is John, so I'll take a stab at it. I think, Joe, I think when you're looking at these companies, and I think the point about the comparison to small caps, I think, is very valid. So, when you're talking about active versus passive, the reason the small caps are so attractive from an active standpoint is you feel you can find these businesses that have a lot of inefficiencies. They're not covered heavily by Wall Street, and therefore you can kind of uncover these hidden gems. And I think I can really make the case that you find a lot of these types of businesses in mid-cap as well. Again, we talked about defining the market cap range. We talked about that 2 to 10 billion, right, or 2 to 30 billion. So there's still a lot of great businesses that we believe that we call them in the mid-cap area kind of old enough to know but young enough to grow, meaning they're still at the younger part of their business life cycle and they still have a lot of growth in front of them. And again, these are companies compared to large caps, again, are not being as heavily covered on the sell side research as large caps are. So they're still some of those undiscovered gems. These are companies, on the other hand, usually have better balance sheets than a lot of the small cap names. They generate greater capital than small caps. So, and they have a tendency to be a lot better businesses and can hold up better during recessionary environments. So we think that the case for mid caps actually holds up, I think, just as strongly in mid caps as it does in small caps, and finding those names, creating and making that stock selection create that differentiation that allows you to outperform the market.
So, go ahead.
This is Doug. I was just going to add to that. I think, the active passive debate, we try not to get too much into that because, you know, bottom line is, you know, an active manager like ourselves has to add value over a reasonable time or we won't have a business. And historically, we've been able to do that. And I don't see any reason we won't be able to continue to do that in the mid-cap and other spaces. And if we don't, then we won't have a business. And so we try not to get too involved in the active-passive debate overall because there are a lot of active managers out there that really aren't active and really probably shouldn't be in the business, and they're getting weeded out, which is probably okay and probably fair. And then there's a lot that can add significant value. So we think we're in that category, and hopefully we'll continue to demonstrate that. And I would just add to John's comments about mid-cap in particular, it's not only is it not widely covered, they're not widely owned either. And so you get the benefit of increasing institutional ownership and sponsorship over time as the sell side picks up more and more coverage of these companies as they become bigger and bigger and more successful over time. And the large cap investors, most of them haven't even looked at these companies and won't for a number of years until they're in the $100 billion plus range. So we still think it's a really inefficient area, as John mentioned, and under-owned, dramatically under-owned. So that would suggest an opportunity for any well-positioned active manager in the space.
Yeah. So Doug, I would add, as far as being under-owned, I would also say it's under-covered. Think about the financial media doesn't cover it. To John's point, mid-cap stocks have 45% fewer covering analysts than large-cap stocks. So it's kind of, again, I use this middle child example, but really it should be the sweet spot. I think if you go back to 1995 and you look at the best performing size class, since 1995, mid-caps have outperformed small caps and large caps on that longer-term basis. So maybe on a one-year basis they're underperforming as rates continue to move lower and inflation's expectations continue to move lower. But it's about that rebalancing opportunity. Don, I want to just present you a statistic again, and I want you to just kind of offer from a portfolio construction diversification in mind. What does this mean to you? So think about this. The top 10 stocks account for nearly 23% of the S&P, but yet they only account for 6% of the mid-cap index.
Right, and so that's to me that's fantastic. You know what what I would say is that what we talk about with the mid cap space all the time is that the other two gentlemen were alluding to, it's the information opportunity of small, but the liquidity of large. So you know when we can own, we don't have to be beholden to stocks maybe that have these or benchmarks that have these giant weightings in them, that if you're just wrong on a stock that's got a 6-8% weighting in it, it could really hurt you and very difficult to make up. You know, we don't pay attention to that, and we don't have to pay attention to that. And so that truly allows us to differentiate ourselves relative to our peer group and relative to the benchmarks and to put up and generate alpha for our clients. So yeah, I think it's great that I don't have to worry about, big, large positions in the benchmark and own them, just because you have active managers out there that Doug was referring to that are more benchmark-like because they're afraid they're going to lose to some of these bigger cap, bigger names. We don't have that issue in mid-cap, which is, to me, it's just great. It gives us a chance to put up some good performance, and I think over long periods of time, you've alluded to it as well. You've seen that mid-caps have put up better performance than large cap and with very similar risk profiles to large cap, and then it had less risk, standard deviation than small, and put up similar to better performance in small. So on a risk adjusted basis, there's nothing better than being in mid cap over these long periods of time.
Okay, the simple question is usually the better question. So let me ask you a basic question in terms of managing a mid cap portfolio. Valuations change, companies grow. So if you've got a company that you have owned that we could define as mid-cap and you witness that growth, what do you do with that holding? Do you sell it? Walk me through that process. And for any of the three of you.
Well, this is Don with the value. I'll tell you, we have a very well-defined process here for that. So, when we have companies, 80% of our portfolio is within the range that's established by the Russell folks for mid-cap, and that's all we use the benchmark for. We do not manage to a benchmark at all. when we have that 20% bucket for that very reason you're talking about. If I buy a stock on the low end of the range around $2 billion and the stock falls 20% for whatever reason, I'm probably going to want to buy more if I'm still convinced in the fundamentals. I don't want to be forced to sell something that in my process is telling me to buy it just because it's some arbitrary benchmark. And the other end of the spectrum is right, too. If I buy something that's close to $30 billion, it gets to 35, yet I still think there's 30% upside, I don't want to be forced to sell it there either. So we have a pretty well-defined process there for keeping the portfolio mid-cap, but also allowing ourselves some flexibility on the fringes there with big or really large or smaller companies to continue to hold those stocks.
Doug, if I could get you, just when your selection of a mid-cap, the process in which you're doing that, give me two or three of the characteristics that you're looking for.
Well, what we'd like to see is decent revenue growth, margin expansion opportunities, low market share in a very large, hopefully, and growing marketplace. We'd like to see a business and a product that's faster, cheaper, and better than its peers, and that's protectable, and that, if the business works the way that we think it works, that they're going to be in the catbird seat and be in the lead in their marketplace for an extended period of time, 5, 10, or more years, and that investors are going to underestimate, sort of the regression to the mean mentality that so many professional investors have in the business, and that the business is actually going to prosper and grow because of the moat and competitive protection and differentiation that the product has. Is going to allow the business to grow for an extended period of time and look expensive to investors for a very, very, very long time. So that's sort of, the key attributes that I'm looking for on the growth side.
John, in terms of searching for alpha, a lot of investors have offered that opportunity might be sourced internationally as it relates to small caps and in the emerging markets as it relates to small caps. Can we share that type of optimism when we look outside of the U.S. and find opportunities in international small caps, mid caps rather?
Yeah, Joe. So I would answer that this way. I think that in general, there is a ton of opportunities here still in the U.S. And if you look at the aggregate in our portfolios and you were to say, okay, what percent of the entire portfolio's revenue is coming from outside the U.S., It's around 20-25%, and we do give ourselves a little leeway in owning some ADRs outside the U.S. on certain securities. But for us, we would rather find a business, based in the U.S. And as Doug talked about those attributes, right? Companies that have that sustainable competitive advantage that can grow and are just kind of tapping in to the international markets as a new avenue of growth for them, so to sustain that growth. We think that we can find these businesses that are having sustainable growth and typically these are businesses that have low capital intensity, so strong free cash flow, high variable expenses on their income statement. So these are companies as well that can hold up well during difficult economic times. So because that's very important for us to protect on the downside as well. So, for us, I think we're looking for more businesses that can have a little bit of exposure to international and maybe, again, give ourselves a little wiggle room on ADRs. But for the most part, I would say there's still a lot of great opportunity here, in the U.S.
Okay, perfect. All right, operator, at this point, let's get those that have been kind enough to dial in and listened over the last 30 minutes or so. Let's get them involved with some questions, please. I encourage everyone on the call to get in here and ask some questions of Don, John, and Doug.
Thank you. If you would like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. Once again, to register a question, it is the 1-4 on your telephone. One moment, please.
Hey, John, it's Barry. While we're waiting for questions to queue up, you had mentioned, I heard, that mid-caps represent 26% of the market capitalization, but only 13% of fund ownership. Is that, did I get that right?
It's 26% of the overall equity market, Barry. And then 30% of that is actually invested, yeah.
And to what do you attribute that underweight to mid-caps from investors?
So, again, I think it goes back to what we've been talking about, how they're kind of underrepresented and unknown. So a lot of these companies are not being followed by the research into the large bullish bracket brokerage companies like the Facebooks, the Netflix, the Googles are, right? So because that representation is very small, a lot of people just aren't even aware of these companies. And there's a lot in that 2 to 10 billion market cap that I'll mention a lot of companies nobody's even heard of. So I think that's a big part of it. And, you know, as to Doug's point, as they do get from move on from that 10 billion plus and they get more research coverage, they do come get a little more well known, and it kind of feeds upon itself over time. And that's really what happens, and that's why these companies continue, as long as they continue to put out the fundamentals, they'll continue to grow from that 10 billion all the way up to 30 and 40, which is, again, a nice problem to have.
And Barry, Doug, I would just add to that, you know, it's really, and I don't want to pick on consultants and, you know, people that do asset allocation advice. They've been saying I started in mid caps in 1994, telling people that they didn't have it covered between large cap and mid cap or large cap and small cap portfolios. And many people still believe that, even though all available evidence, and when you actually ask them to look and see what they've got in their portfolios, you know, that they don't have this covered. But it's, you know, there's a lot of myths in our business. That's one of them, and it's prevalent, and it's still out there.
Thank you.
And all, there are no questions pending at present time. As a brief reminder, to register a question, it is the 1-4 on your phone. We do have our first question from the line of Phil Byers with Raymond James. Your line is open.
Thank you. I'm interested to know if the mid-cap growth portfolio is strategically built in a similar fashion to the small-cap growth. I'm a big utilizer of the small-cap growth portfolio, but obviously that's closed. So I'm wondering if you get some similar characteristics between the two strategies.
You do get some. This is Doug. You do get some. There are similarities, and there's a lot more similarities than there are differences, but there are some important differences. Mid-cap growth relative to its benchmark, that the benchmark being the Russell mid-cap growth, tends to run a beta of about 1, plus or minus 0.1, let's say. You know, our small-cap growth tends to run a lower beta relative to its benchmark, which is the Russell 2000 growth. If you look at the two portfolios on a standalone basis, regardless of the benchmarks that they compete against, the volatility of the portfolios is actually very similar on a day-to-day basis. You know, there's a different team involved in picking the mid-cap growth stocks. There's some overlap between the two portfolios, typically about 10 to 15%. You know, sometimes we graduate some of the small-cap names into the mid-cap portfolios. We own a little more what I would call traditional technology in mid-growth than we do in small-cap growth, which contributes to those slightly higher beta relative to its benchmark. And we own a few more names. So small growth tends to own about 25 to 35 names, and in mid-growth we own about 50 names. Right now, 30 to 50 is our range. And right now, to be honest with you, we're having trouble keeping the number of names down because there's so many attractive businesses out there to buy that are doing well,
sure,
even in
sure
the environment that we're in today. So those are some of the highlights.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Sure.
So in light of the fact that if I use you for a small-cap growth strategy, right now I've been using the mid-cap core as a way to utilize your expertise in that asset class. Do those funds typically pair fairly well together?
Which two?
The small cap growth and the mid cap core.
Yeah, this is John. I would say that that's probably a fair statement. Going back to what Doug was talking about, those two portfolios, I'm the PM. I'm a co-PM on the small cap growth and the lead PM on the mid cap core. And the team that is picking the analyst, the team that's picking the stocks for those are the same, is the same team for each of those portfolios.
Okay.
Any further questions, operator?
No, sir. No further questions at present time.
Okay. Well,
okay.
I will turn the call back over to Barry.
Thank you, Joe. And thanks, John. Thank you, Doug. And thank you, Don. Thanks all for listening to this call. For any additional market commentary or any portfolio-specific insights, please visit our website at Virtus.com. Or if you have some additional questions that you would like further information, please don't hesitate to give us a call at 1-800-243-4361. Again, Joe, John, Doug, and Don, thanks very much for your time today. And thanks to all of you who joined us today as well. Have a great evening.
That does conclude the conference call for today. Thank you for your participation, and I'll see you.